Thompson Island Brewing. This podcast is brought to you by our friends at Sodell Concepts. Sodell Concepts is excited to open Thompson Island Brewing Company this fall, their 12th location. Thompson Island will be a 250-seat brew pub located off Route 1, next to Blue Coast Rehoboth. The brew pub will pay homage to the area and will feature an outdoor beer garden with fun activities at our beach. They're also excited to partner with Trog's Independent Brewing, which together they will feature award-winning craft beers. Their menu will feature amazing food crafted by Chef Doug Rooley, which will include local fresh ingredients, wood-fired favorites that will pair perfectly with our beer. Follow along and stay up to date as Thompson Island Brewing Company comes to life. Make sure to follow them on Facebook at Thompson Island Brewing Company or at www.thompsonislandbrewing.com.
This is The Film Effect with Tiff.
I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, welcome everybody. This is The Film Effect with Tiff. And I have a very cool guest with me today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. My name is Chris Malinowski. I'm a filmmaker and musician. And I think it's the temporal lobe that she's suffering from.
She is. Yeah. I mean, they had a lot of diagnoses.
Uh-huh. All male.
So if you guys haven't guessed it, we are talking about The Exorcist today. The original Exorcist from 1973, which is when I was born.
I was 69.
Oh, wow. Yeah, isn't that?
I just turned 50.
Did you? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm the youngster around here with everyone. A little bit. Now, Jenna's younger than us, so that makes... But anyway, I want to... before I even get into talking about this movie, I want to do a little plug or housekeeping in a sense. I want to mention just some of the other podcasts we have on the podcast network for Rehoboth Social. We have Anonymous, an honest recovery podcast with Jenna. We have Broken Stoked with Tom and Carlos. We have Food Therapy with Gretchen. We have, of course, The Film Effect with Tiff and Rehoboth Social podcast, small businesses helping each other. And that is basically it. So please, if you are listening, like, follow, subscribe, follow all of our web pages and send us emails to, I don't know, anywhere you want to send a message. You can send it Facebook. You can send it Instagram. We love your feedback. We want to hear what people have to say about our podcasts, and we're really excited. So keep listening. Okay. So, Chris, tell me, do you want to tell people how we met? Sort of?
Yeah, we met at a vegan Thanksgiving dinner on the Rehoboth boardwalk.
Yeah, and I feel like a faker because I'm not vegan. Are you
I am vegan.
You
I'm 100% vegan. Okay. All right, I'm out of here. I'll see you.
Let's get you out of the closet. So I just went because I know Tara. I don't know if you know Tara. She kind of was involved in, I think, creating that event.
I may have met her then, and just I had had a couple of glasses of wine that night.
Oh, okay. But it was a great event, and it was really cool, and I like vegan food, even though I'm not vegan. And then we met, and then you are a filmmaker. So maybe real quick, give us some background if you want to just share about your filmmaking.
Sure. I made a feature film in Lewis and Rehoboth called Yes, Your Tide is Cold and Dark, Sir. And it's available at Amazon.com. You can stream it or buy
the DVD.
Oh,
cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was financed by a man named Alan Burkhart. It was $150,000.
Wow.
But it was my first feature.
Yeah.
Before that, I made a 16mm experimental featurette down here called Alms, You Say, which it's fine. It's an experimental film on 16mm.
How long ago was that one?
That was 2007.
Okay. And you shot that on 16?
That was shot on Super 16.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then now I'm in the throes of pre-production for my second feature film called The Last Time I Saw You Blessed, which was written for Rehoboth and Lewis.
Wow, that's so cool.
I don't think we're shooting it here. I think we're shooting it in New Jersey because the powers that be / the money that be insists on a tax, some kind of a tax benefit. And we don't have one here. We don't have a tax incentive in Delaware for shooting.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, it's 35% in New Jersey. It's 25% in Maryland. And in certain parts of upstate New York, it's like 40%. Yeah. Isn't
wow.
that nuts?
I've never, you know, it's funny. I've been talking a lot on the show. I am a photographer by trade.
Mm-hmm.
But I did go to film school and I do have a film background and I just haven't done much of it for years. And then as I've started talking on the show, as everyone's been listening, you guys have been listening to me talk a lot about movies mm-hmm. in my past. I'm learning a lot about talking to local people that are doing films now as adults here that are kind of indie people. And yeah, it's like a different world because when I shot, I only made a few shorts when I was in grad school, but they were all shot on 16. I don't even know what it would be like to start shooting. I mean, I made some like very fun little movies on my digital Canon, mm-hmm. you know, professional Canon equipment, but it's such a different world in terms of if you wanted to make a feature, what media would you choose?
Yeah.
Kind of. Is that something you kind of have to think about?
Yeah, like you do. And also you the most important thing is to have a really solid story that you're just dying to tell, because it will take, I mean, Yes, Your Tide came together pretty quickly. I'd written it over the course of about a year,
yeah.
but it probably took me about 6 or 7 months to get the funding, which is not long for that much money, and it's a really
low
budget.
That's a lot. You did a good job.
Thank you.
I never got that amount of money.
The second
I was trying
film,
to do like a 20-minute short.
The second one, though, the last time I saw you, Blessed, is taking a longer period of time. Like, we have a good chunk of money, but we need much, much more. So now we have partners in Los Angeles. I'll be flying out to the American Film Market
cool.
the second week of November. I was just there last year also. It's always a great excuse to go to Los Angeles and just eat food and
oh,
drink.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You go to the market for the first couple of hours in the day, and then you just
hey, man.
Pretend like you live there.
Yeah, I know. And I did live out there for like about, because I went to grad school out there. So I lived
nice.
Out there for like about 8 years. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you
it
miss
was.
It?
It was. I do sometimes. But I like, I don't know. I like being on the East Coast. I still
love
California.
Here.
I love both. You know, this mm-hmm. is where my life is now and this is where my family is. But I definitely love California too. All right. Well, I know you guys are probably like all my fans. They're super excited to hear me talk about this film today. I know you guys are. And there's a lot to say, I think. It was interesting. I did try to do a little promoting on Facebook to get people to watch this movie again if they were going to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people wrote me and were like, nope, sorry. Saw that when I was like a kid and I'll never see it again. And it was so I had an interesting response to even just telling other people like, hey, guys, let's watch this movie again because it's kind of interesting to watch. And you had commented on my page and said that you had met the director.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what sparked me to contact you to come on the show. So to maybe tell me that story real quick.
Sure, sure. I went with my friend Bill Ackerman, who has the Supporting Characters podcast,
yeah.
to, I think it was Metrograph in New York, or it was Lincoln Center, because William Friedkin was going to be screening his film Cruising from 1980 with
okay.
Al Pacino.
Wow.
Which is a film about a serial killer running amok in the cruisy, gay, leather underworld.
I cannot
of
believe
Manhattan.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. Actually, well, it was protested. It was protested because there were gay protesters because they didn't want to be stigmatized, obviously, because of the film's nature and the subject matter. And Pacino didn't want it released, as far as I can understand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't want it released. But it's a really great, atmospheric, gritty tale. And it's got some ambiguity.
Yeah.
In the end of
yeah.
it. So I thought it was a fantastic film. So Friedkin was there speaking about the film.
Okay.
And and then afterwards he was walking around. So, of course, I stopped him. And
you're like, hey,
yeah.
you.
And
let's
he was,
chat.
He was. I was intimidated by him.
Were you really?
Yeah. I had seen footage on one of the Exorcist commentaries or documentaries years before. And
okay.
he seemed so solid and so like he was going to be mean to me if I met him.
Did you think that? He had,
but
like, a presence that was
yeah,
like, don't talk to me.
It was almost foreboding.
Yeah, some people have that, for
but,
sure.
But
yeah.
then when I saw him, he was kind of jovial. He was cracking jokes with the audience, and he kept referencing Chinatown, which he didn't direct, but he kept saying, it's Chinatown, Jake. And I thought, boy, this guy's, like, kind of happy-go-lucky.
Isn't it funny? Like, people always are different sometimes than the way that they present to you.
Yeah.
Which is just true about so many people in the world.
I think he had
yeah.
a sense of humor
yeah.
about himself also and about his films. But I would definitely recommend Cruising. It's a great film.
I'm going to check. You know, this is what I love about doing this is I've been talking to other people just and not just film. Like the last person I had on is this guy named Rob Waters. He's mm-hmm. a local guy that does video, but he's made some short films here. And he kind of is an independent filmmaker as well. He does some really cool stuff. And it's always a different conversation when I talk about movies with somebody who's, you know, studied film or made films than when I talk to just regular people who receive movies. And so it's been cool to, because my original idea with the show is, and you people that are listening know this, is to really ask people, you know, what's a movie that's affected you? Like, think of a movie in your life that you were really affected by and, like, why. And then we talk about that. And that's the movie pick. You know, it comes from the guest, usually. You were very kind to just let me, you know, I'm sorry. I kind of pushed this movie because I really wanted to talk about it. And yeah. I was like, who's going to talk about this movie with me? You know, like, I got to find somebody.
I'll do it.
And you were like, I'll do it. I'm like, thank you. Yeah, and I don't know why this movie freaks people. Listen, it's a scary movie.
Mm-hmm. It's about so much more than demonic possession, though, and that's why I think it's worthy of study.
Yeah. So let's just get into it. I'm gonna real quick for everyone listening, give you the details of this movie. So this movie is called The Exorcist. It was made in 1973. The director is William Friedkin. I always feel like I say people's names wrong. Written by William Peter Blatty. I guess he did write the screenplay, but he also wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
I have not read the book.
I didn't read it either. We had it in our house when I was a kid, and the blurry photo on the front just scared me.
Yeah. And you wouldn't go near it.
I didn't read it. I think my sisters read it. It was next to that book, Audrey Rose. We used to have Audrey Rose also a film adaptation later on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. I'm starting to think, like, maybe I should go back and read some of these books. Ellen Burstyn is in this movie. Max von Sydow.
Sydow.
Thank you. I knew you were going to know. Of course, Linda Blair. Poor Linda Blair. I feel like she's, I don't know. You're going to tell me, I'm sure. He's got things to say. And there's more people in this. Also, of course, Jason Miller, who played Father Karras, and a bunch of other people. But those are the main stars of this film. So those are the details. And, yeah, this is a pretty scary movie, people would say. I think most people that saw it when they were young, like, it was the movie that really scared the shit out of them.
Yeah, it was very intense.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember I'd seen it in 1979. I had we moved down to Delaware. My parents were getting divorced. My mom left my dad. And I'd started a trend with my father where he would take me to go see drive-in triple bills. And then we moved down to Delaware, and we moved into my grandmother's house, which was a very traditional Catholic Italian
did
household.
It look like the father's mother's house apartment?
I was going to say.
kind of, sort of.
And yeah, it was just like antiquated furniture and decorating motif, and it just reminded me of like cold linoleum bathroom floors, stiff white sheets. And I'm making this sound like totally unfriendly, but it wasn't. And there's still some love in the home.
I love a good visual. Yeah, that's awesome.
And like plastic on the furniture, and everything felt very sterile. And then we came to live with her. I have two older sisters, and everything changed. It got a little more vibrant and flamboyant and just fun. But when I saw The Exorcist, my aunt and uncle lived upstairs in the upstairs apartment for my grandmother. And I walked upstairs, and the first scene I think I saw was the head spinning around.
That's the first scene you saw.
Yeah, and then the line, "Oh my God, know what she did? Your cunting daughter." Oh, and I was like, God. Wow, what is this? And I was so frightened. And then somebody explained to me what the film was about. And I was like, there's demons? There's like someone could possess you?
I know.
And then I saw the full film maybe a month or so later on HBO, also in their apartment. I don't know why I was allowed to watch it. You know,
what is wrong with our parents? Yeah. I don't understand. That's all I think now. I'm like, wait, what? Did I see that movie when I was a kid? What?
It infused the fabric of my being, though. Like, I really felt like that demon or that presence was like exuding the walls of every room in that house.
Oh my God, that's scary, though.
Yeah, because it's a domestic film. You know, the scenery is very kind of understated in this film. You know, and it feels like a house, you know, when you're watching the film. It's not in outer space. It's not in a cemetery. It feels like your house.
Yeah,
it holds you where you live.
Anybody's house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think this movie, and I don't know for sure, but it seems like the book and then this movie was kind of the first time people heard of this, maybe.
Yeah, I think you're right
about that. I feel like being raised Catholic, I don't know. I feel like I knew about this from my parents, or there's always like things you pick up, you know, about like you can be possessed. But this, I think, was the movie that kind of told everybody like this could maybe happen to you. You know, at least they believe it can happen and they have done this. You know, this is kind of an example of how this goes down. And then, of course, it set the tone to have many movies like the same story. And there's been many versions of The Exorcist. There's actually a really cool show recently in the past year. Did you watch it?
No, I don't.
There's an awesome show, a show, I think it was on, I wonder if it was Fox, but it's called The Exorcist, I think. And man, it was so good. It was such a great updated like version of like this story, not the specific story, but of like a priest and kind of like a bad, you know, a priest who's had a bad go. He's not a priest anymore. Mm-hmm. And he's like still doing this. Like, it's such a great, you know, I love that. I was saying to someone on the last podcast, God, I love a bad priest. I don't know why.
Aren't they all?
I guess.
A bad priest, isn't that redundant?
I mean, I guess. I mean, I'm torn about
kidding.
That, too. I think that's what people think now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, now that's a whole other conversation. But, like, people do think that about the Catholic Church.
Uh-huh.
Like, all the priests are terrible.
I wonder why.
Gee, me too. I don't know. But I actually had some good priests, like, in my... I feel like I feel connected to... There's good and bad stuff about my upbringing around that. But,
Like Judas Priest, you know?
Yeah, like Judas Priest. I don't discard the bad priest. Not totally. Now everyone's going to be like writing me back.
I know.
What's wrong with you? They're evil, you know. Yeah. It's like bad people are bad people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
Agreed.
That what it's about?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know. What are your first... So you're telling me how you first saw this film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that I would not sleep in my own bed or my own bedroom for almost 5 years. After seeing it, or maybe maybe not that long, maybe like 3 years.
So
that's
where
not an
did
exaggeration. I'm embarrassed to say
Tell
that
me.
I slept with my sister
Aww.
In her room. I know this sounds so.
Why are you embarrassed? That's so cute.
Well, I'm telling the truth, and with my mom.
Hey, you know, so many kids do that.
Should we bring a psychologist in now?
No, I mean, I think like, I don't know. I don't judge. I have a lot of children. Okay, like I've seen everything.
Mm-hmm.
Kids go through stages. I always say, like, if you don't want them in your bed forever, you get them out. Like,
yeah.
it's not a big deal. Sometimes kids go through tough times, and they just need, like, a little support around it.
Well, I still sleep with my mom. Is that...
No, that's a problem. I'm just kidding.
Can we cut that?
I think they know you're joking.
Did you not feel... had you seen it when you were a child?
I honestly don't remember when I saw it.
Okay.
I know I saw it when I was I bet I was probably like a 12, 13, 14.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling I was around that age. So I do remember seeing it back then.
Mm-hmm.
By then it was probably the 80s when I saw that movie.
Okay.
So yeah, and it's disturbing. It's a really disturbing movie. I always think like, does it translate today? You know, we actually, this is so funny, and I'll have to post this so everybody who's interested can watch it, but I do this weird thing with our family. Every year, I've made a Halloween movie with the kids, okay, since we got together. And we always do, like, what I do to make it fun and easy, because I usually do it, it's a complete shit show. I do it in, like, a day. Nobody has, like, lines. I just tell everybody what to say. We just spoof, we just spoof a movie,
this
okay?
This sounds fun.
Yeah, like we spoofed Halloween.
Uh-huh.
So one year, I just was dying to make fun of The Exorcist. So I got them to all, and you have to understand, these kids are like 8, 10, you know, and I'm thinking like, how am I going to get these kids to do? This is like a really scary movie.
Uh-huh.
So I won't tell you exactly what we did to make fun of it, but there are some funny scenes in it. And Isabella was the oldest at the time, our oldest daughter. I bet she was like, it's a few years ago, maybe she was like 13.
Mm-hmm.
And so we watched it with her, and she just thought it was funny. She's like, this is stupid. This is funny, you know, because she's, like, cursing. Like, you know, she's like, fuck you, Jesus, and all this. And she just thought it was so funny. And I'm like, okay, this movie scared the hell out of me, and you just think this is hilarious. So I don't know if it translates today as being as scary, maybe just for people that had seen it back then.
I think so, yeah, because there's some kind of residual primal fear that still is, you know, kind of, comes up for me, a little fire when I watch
it.
I mean,
attached
it's not,
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I think it just harkens back to my childhood, you know, when I first saw it, mm-hmm. and that it felt very visceral and real at the time. And then I equated it with what was going on in my own life. And actually, when we talk a little bit more about the story mechanics and such, I'll comment
let's
on
get
that
into
a little
it.
Bit more.
Yeah.
But it should also be stated that the films that came out this same year in 73, do you know?
Any, no, like, I don't.
Roster?
Tell me.
So Serpico, the Sidney Lumet film,
wow.
which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Paper Moon, the Peter Bogdanovich film. Paper Chase, the James Bridges film. The Long Goodbye, probably my favorite Robert Altman film. The Last Detail, the Hal Ashby film, and then The Way We Were, the Sidney Pollack film. Like, all of these films came
Whoa.
Out. This is when filmmakers existed. Like,
yeah,
people who
yeah.
really cared about storytelling. And then Friedkin's Exorcist is on the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was up for Academy Awards.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, and we can, yeah, go ahead. If you have something to say about that.
It got, like, best sound design and maybe best screenplay or something. I'm not sure.
I can tell you.
And Bill Maley, I know, IMDb, right?
I have it right here. Yeah.
Bill Maley's production design, I think, was up for an Academy Award also. I don't think he got it, but.
Yeah. Well, you look like you made some notes, so I'm going to let you, you want to get into it a little bit?
I did.
Share what you have?
Yeah,
I'd love
sure.
I'd love to hear what you have to say, and then we can, I'll add some of my stuff, too.
I was going to comment on why I thought the film worked so well.
Yeah, tell me.
And, well, even now, like, when I watched it this time, I didn't pay attention much to the demonic possession. I paid more attention to the characters themselves. And the characters that I was most intrigued by were, obviously, Father Karras.
Of course.
Because he's totally
oh my
a handsome
God.
Dude.
Obsessed.
Like, how, I wish.
He's like the Rocky priest.
Yes.
If I was
that good looking, I would never leave the house.
No. Yeah. I was like, who is this priest? And it's funny you're talking about, like, being raised in Catholicism. And, like, when I was a kid, it was so great. So I rewatched this movie just the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And a good friend of mine, Kelly Adams, I told you I would mention you, so I'm mentioning you, Kelly. one of my very good childhood friends, she decided to join me kind of on Facebook while we watched it at the same time.
Oh, cool.
And we were just commenting the whole, like, as we were watching it, and all we kept talking about was, like, our experience with our Catholic priest. I'm like, who is this priest? I'm like, did they all smoke? I don't remember them smoking. And I'm like, why is he in a college dorm? Like, we were just having the funniest conversations because
they hang out there.
Yeah. And I'm like, this isn't the priest that we had in school. Like, this guy's cool. And she's like, I don't know why, but I think he's hot. I'm like, he is kind of hot, isn't he? Like, this is not your normal priest.
He's a great looking dude.
Yeah, he was great, but I still thought he was so good.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so real.
And he was understated.
Totally.
I think just as an actor, which is, I think it was Jack Nicholson was up for that role, I think.
Yeah, you're right. I have some fun facts.
And Friedkin, I think, said that he was too unholy a person or something like that. But if if that were so, I just think it would become a Jack Nicholson film. Although I think he's great in Bob Rafelson's Five Easy Pieces and King of Marvin Gardens, where he is kind of a more understated as Jack Nicholson can be.
It is tough with that.
Character, yeah. And Brando, I think, was up for the Father Mirren role.
I think you're right.
But he would have chewed up the scenery also. And maybe it was at Audrey Hepburn who was up for...
Yeah, Brando was up for it. Audrey Hepburn was up
for
Ellen's role.
Ellen
Actually,
Burstyn's
a bunch
role.
Of people were. I think he contacted, like, Jane Fonda and Bancroft.
Mm-hmm.
So she just got lucky.
We met her also. By
oh,
the way.
Wow. I think she's awesome.
My wife cried. Yeah,
really?
It was really cool. I know we're like,
you guys are like diehards. I love it.
Topic here, but, yeah.
No, you should just, that's how I do this. Sorry. Follow. Everyone follow. I'm all over. No, but yeah, you're right. So, like, I think that there was. You know, I love hearing about the making of movies. Mm-hmm. I had my friend on. I told you, Rob, we talked about Jaws, which was a great one to talk about because there's so much shit that went wrong when they mm-hmm. made that movie. I think even the coming together of this film took a different path than that he thought it was going to go. Like, even getting the actors that he got who ended up being in the film. And I think that's why the movie seemed kind of real when you, like, it
Definitely.
Scared you more because mm-hmm. you didn't know who these people were.
They
Maybe
seemed like common people. Well,
yeah,
Burstyn was coming off of Last Picture Show, the Peter Bogdanovich
okay,
film,
yeah.
which is like a perfect film. But I don't know how much her star was rising at that point. And then after that, she did Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Right. So you're right. And I think that's why the movie works pretty well. And I think when they do that today in movies, it works really well, especially in movies that are meant to scare you,
mm-hmm.
like horror films or thrillers or that's why I love foreign films too. Like, you ever see The Babadook?
I did not see
Okay, so The Babadook is a really crazy movie, but I think it's really effective because I don't know if it's Australian or British, whatever, but you just don't know who anyone is in that movie.
And Which so is perfect.
It's great. And so, like, when you watch it, it's like you really can take it in differently than mm-hmm. if you have, like, a Jack Nicholson attached to it or somebody who you have, you know, you already know who these people are. And even though he's versatile, he's still Jack Nicholson,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You can't get around it. So that was great. And I love Ellen. I think she's just so awesome. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that we've discussed.
There we go. Check that one off.
Check it out. So what? Yeah. So go ahead. I like your notes.
So yeah, I see like two parallel crises in this film, and that's what I thought made the film work. And the first is obviously Father Karras, who I think Friedkin said that he cast him because he had seen a play that Jason Miller wrote. I hope I'm not misremembering this.
Oh,
called
I don't
That
know.
Championship Season.
Wow.
And he said the character in that film that he played reeked of failed Catholicism.
Wow.
And that's why he cast him as Father Karras, which I just thought it was such a great, I just thought it was fantastic. What a way to cast someone. So you have Father Karras going through this loss of faith in a role wherein he must counsel priests who are also losing their faith.
Yeah.
He's losing his mother. His mother's tossing on gobs of Catholic guilt also. And he's supposed to be the good Catholic son. The mother dies and he's not around. I guess the mother's brother is a little more laissez-faire about the whole affair. Like, I'll just toss her in here, you know, into the nursing home.
I know. What's up with that guy? I was like, screw your brother. He's an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wasn't there. And, you know, so he feels like he disappointed her and he abandoned her, which is emasculating, especially for a Catholic male, the ones who are supposed to be in charge.
Oh, my God.
I use that loosely, but.
Yeah.
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 So all of this stuff is going on with him. And then with Regan McNeil, he's, you know, coming to her aid. And she's going through a loss of innocence. So you have the loss of faith, loss of innocence. You have the dissolution of the family unit, wherein you have an absentee father character.
Yes.
And if you notice in the film, like after Ellen Burstyn's on the phone with the father's secretary.
So angry. Yeah.
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 Like Reagan's behind, you know, around the wall listening. And right after that, it kind of goes into the bed shaking scene.
It's crazy when they go into these scenes.
And it's almost like it's a psychosis brought on by whatever's going on in the household and not necessarily demonic possession. I'm not going to, you know.
Getting deep, man. Yeah, getting deep. No, this is what I like.
It's kind of boring, but.
No, I mean, this is, listen, whether you research it or whether you, I think, I'm hearing your take,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is that you notice this stuff and it resonated with you to have to say that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, so yeah, she has this absentee father and then she discusses her mother's possibly being attracted to Burke Jennings, the director of the film. Yeah.
She's like, he can come.
Yeah.
He can come with us on our fun day. And I'm like, okay.
Film within a film. Like he is the father, the director of the film. And then he dies.
God.
So he's gone.
Yeah.
So there's no father figure.
That's so good.
But all of the stuff that's happening with her is like the typical loss of innocence that adolescence brings on, like the betrayal of the flesh. You start to look a little bit different. The physical changes. And the horror
You're
of adolescence.
You're making me laugh.
Yeah. You know, it is. I'm serious. And
well,
then
I have a funny line in our family movie where I dressed up our two. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, go
so
for
we
it.
Had our two sons dress up as the priests. And I had them ad-lib a scene about, like, when they're about to go in and do the exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, we have a situation. And they just made it up. And to this day, it's the funniest thing. I said, listen, here's what needs to happen. You're going to go up there and you're going to, like, do an exorcism on this girl. And, like, you're trying to warn the other priest to not listen to what she's going to say. And it's going to be okay, but it's going to be hard. And Oliver is just so funny. So it's Duncan and our kids, Duncan and Oliver. And Duncan is saying, like, he's like, listen to me. Whatever she says, da-da-da. And he's like, she's going through something really difficult. And he goes, is it puberty? And I was like, oh my God, that's perfect.
That's a great read for
it. It's exactly what you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Is that she is also going through, you know, the change of becoming a woman, you know? Continue.
No, I was going to say, and also that there is, you know, vaginal bleeding in there. That's an allusion to period blood. Obviously, it's self-induced. In
oh,
this film.
You
She's
said
stabbing
it.
Stabbing herself with the crucifix.
Oh my God! I know. I'm like, are we going to talk about that?
I do have a story about that.
You do
concerning Friedkin. I'll talk about it after I.
Oh my God!
Babble. But
you have a lot of stories about this. I had no idea.
So. And then ultimately, over and over again, the change comes with she's probed by male figures.
Totally.
In an attempt to, you know, control her in some way, shape, or form, or diagnose her. This is where the temporal lobe comes in.
Oh my God, there's so much ridiculousness going on with that.
I love Ellen Burstyn's reaction to all of this also.
Oh, poor Ellen. She's like, what the hell is happening now? Yeah.
But even to the point where she's, you know, penetrating herself with the crucifix. So even Christ is probing her in a way, you know, and then the needles when she's getting, you know, stuck with the needles and she's saying, I don't want it.
Oh, I should see my face right now.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's so bad. I hate the needle seed.
And then the demon, the Pazuzu, well, we'll call the demon Pazuzu just for
that's what they call
better.
It.
That's what they call it.
That is what they call it.
I don't think they call it that in the film, though.
And they
that's
don't?
Another, that's another point of discussion, the ambiguity of the evil itself. But I don't think so. I could be wrong.
I don't. I have it here somewhere.
But even
I just
the
look.
Demon is a male... A male, the demon god of wind
in
Mesopotamian mythology. But
yeah, it says the demon's name is Pazuzu, though it's never stated in the film. The demon that takes possession of Regan McNeil has a name, with Pazuzu, which is taken from the name of the king of the demons in...
Mesopotamian mythology.
Yeah, and Babylonian mythology. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it says. So it's interesting that you notice that. They do never say it.
They never say it.
So how are we supposed to know that?
Well... just from doing research on
yes,
the film.
Yes, it's only for the film nerds. You have to go in and really do your digging.
And I was wondering what the little relic was that Max von Sydow finds at the beginning of the film, because, well, we could speak
that's
on that
weird,
for a second,
too. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
But what I was going to say about that is Father Marin finds this Pazuzu, the Mesopotamian demon of wind, I think is how it's described. But he seems, when he finds it, it seems almost as though his life is over. You know, he's in his later days. He's aging. And it almost seems like, Jesus Christ, like, I am not going to escape this.
No, it's coming for you, dude. Yeah, and that's foreshadowing. That's like, guess what? You're going to be fighting some demons.
He seems so resigned.
Pretty soon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I know, and this is why I've been plugging this other show lately a lot that I even texted you, this Inside... The Exorcist show to podcast. They've done Inside Psycho. They've done Inside Just. It's an amazing podcast.
Oh, cool.
Really cool. And he does it in a very theatrical way where he's kind of like being the director, the actor. He's like playing all the parts to tell you this kind of behind the scenes story. And I did get some, it's not something I have written down, but he does talk about how they wanted to do this opening scene in Israel. And it became a complete nightmare that they were going to try and do this. And at the end, I think they weren't even sure if they were going to use it. But it was like one of those things where, like, I think it was such an effort to do it that he was like, I don't care. We're putting it in there.
Friedkin?
Yeah. Like,
I think it sets the tone for the film, too. And it makes it multidimensional.
I think so, too. It definitely takes you into this space where you're like, whoa, this is like, what am I about to watch here? And then you're just in like, boop, regular everyday. Somebody's house.
But I think that speaks to good editing also, or good storytelling, because I feel like, well, at least in terms of the script, I don't know how the book played out, but a lot of times you have to stay a step ahead of the audience or you don't keep them engaged. If they know exactly what's coming next, like, you would never think that you're going to end up in this affluent Georgetown household right after leaving the Iraq desert.
Yeah, and I think this was a movie that no one could see what was going to come next.
Uh-uh.
You have no previous knowledge of a exorcism type movie, so you had no idea what you were about to see. It's definitely it's like an original on so many levels with that. Yeah.
I was going to say, after he discovers that too, it seems like he realizes that evil is simply omnipresent, and he just, the rest of the film, he seems resigned to it.
Yeah.
You know, and then, so speaking to the whole idea that what is the evil in the film? Do you have some stuff to...
No, I love... I'm listening.
No, I feel like I keep using the same phrases.
Okay. No, you're not. No,
coffee.
Don't judge yourself. Okay. Stop. You're great.
I've been judged all my life.
Catholicism has done its job.
I wasn't actually... My father
Are you
was
guilty
a,
right
my,
now?
I'm very guilty. I hope
Are you
so.
Feeling bad
I
about
hope
yourself?
So. I'm very bad.
And I think you're right. I love that this shows priests being... really, you know,
amiable.
Three-dimensional.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up thinking, and this is just personal for me, but like, I remember seeing nuns and thinking, like, I think I saw them one-dimensional. Like, they were so secret.
Uh-huh.
You know, I remember being a kid and thinking, like, they'd go into the rectory, you know, and I'd be like, because I was taught by, like, all nuns.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't
me
have,
too.
Like, it was really like
oh,
that.
I had some teachers. So.
I think actually, it's a lie. I had one lay teacher, but it was kind of at the end of the last year I was there. And they would, like, you know, they'd float through the hallway and you'd hear the ch-ch of their rosary beads. Mm-hmm. And then they would, like, go into the rectory and it was like, what the hell are they doing? Like, you didn't think of them as normal people. It was kind of like, they're not us, and they're not normal, and, like, what are they? And I had a hard time seeing them other than, like, in this very one-dimensional way, even the priests. And so this movie broke that for me.
Sure.
Like, here's a priest who's boxing and mm-hmm. like struggling and trying to take care of his mom. I mean, he had all these different sides of him, and even like, you know, the other priest, what's his name in the movie?
Marin.
Father. Yeah, Father he's Marin. He's the same. And even like I made, I'm just noticing my notes are so different than yours. I like sit and watch the movie and I just write little things down. Like they don't really explain why he's in Israel. Totally, do they? I mean, he's there.
Just that he's on an archaeological dig. And
dig.
I figured maybe it was some kind of a mission trip.
That's
or maybe
what I
that's
guess
what he
too.
Does. But maybe he studied archaeology and this is like his second love or
yeah.
something.
And they're
yeah.
like, guess what? We're not explaining it.
Yeah.
Suck it up.
Which
and
I
so,
kind of like.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And then I did notice like he has the little tin. And at one point when he's getting, like after he sees the thing, he's mm-hmm. like the demon or the artifact, he's eating these little, and I'm like, what is he eating? Are those pills? At first I was like, is that a mint?
Yeah,
like, no.
I think they were mints.
No, but you know what? He ends up, you're funny. You're good. And so then I'm like, yes, because he knew that his breath was really, it's the demon breath. He had demon breath all of a sudden. He's like, I know, this is bad. They're all going to know. So he's taking these pills, and then, of course, he's taking them again later.
Yeah, it's when a foreshadowing for what's going to happen. Yeah.
That he's going to, it's not going to save him, right?
Right.
I mean, this guy's toast. And so that was interesting. And I think my focus because of my experience growing up was really on those priests, even more than the mother at times, because I was just thinking, like, if this guy, especially Karis, is our kind of underdog,
uh-huh.
he's like our hero in a sense. I don't know. It's like you don't feel like it works out for anyone, right?
No.
Like, and there's no redeeming.
He also
moment.
Has a specific vulnerability about him
mm-hmm.
that is attractive.
Yeah.
Same with, obviously, Reagan. And Ellen Burstyn's character, yeah, but there's something about Karis that is...
I think everyone loves him in
mm-hmm.
the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, sorry for people listening, we didn't really even talk through, like, from beginning to end how this story plays out.
Yeah.
But basically a girl...
It's such an older film.
I know. I mean listen,
you
got to see
it. It.
No, by the time you're this far into this podcast, you've got to see this
movie. And why are we calling them friends if they're not... If
they're
they
my friends.
Seen this film?
I'm talking to my imaginary friends right now. You guys are out there. But yeah, it's a movie about a girl who gets possessed
mm-hmm.
and then how they try to deal with it.
Sure.
And that's basically what the movie's about. But yeah, so I'll let you continue because I know you're...
I was going to say about
yeah.
the ambiguity of evil in the film. So, you know, he finds the Pazuzu and it sets the tone for the film. And I think like what we were just talking about is that it just seems like he's defeated. Like he's had it, you know,
yeah,
and he knows
like,
he's
right.
dying. And
yeah.
then with Reagan, what is the evil in her life? We have the absentee father again and the plumbing of the adolescent psyche. And the awakening sexuality, the awakening repressed emotion, again, leading back to the absentee father. And then they keep mentioning her reactions and what's going on with her is an overreaction to depression.
Yeah.
Remember this?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
again, like, you know, a sense of where some of this angst or whatever is going on with her is coming from. And then as kind of a surface item, they mention the Ouija board and Captain Howdy.
Oh, my God. Captain Howdy.
Yeah.
That's just... It's almost comical, like,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's purposeful.
Sure.
Is so that when the shit really hits the fan for the viewer,
uh-huh.
you're like, oh my God, that was no joke. Like, but whatever that was, that little hint of like, I don't know, just Captain Howdy.
Yeah,
you're like,
Captain
okay,
Howdy.
What is Captain Howdy? Okay, she's
mm-hmm.
just a kid making up imaginary people.
Yep. And I think it's a pseudonym for the devil also or something.
Is it really?
Or it has been. I know the Twisted Sister
oh, wow.
wrote a song.
Did they?
Yes, they
was
did.
That...
I'm not kidding. I'm not making a joke.
How could you not
serious.
Make a song up about Captain Howdy?
So
just insert it anywhere. It's just the best thing ever.
And then for Karis, you
that's
know,
too funny.
The demon or the evil seems to be this guilt, this loss of faith, the loss of mother. And at the end of the film, his mother is the demon on the bed. Do you remember?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's really sad. In fact, I have a quick, I do this a little bit and I'll see if I can, just for fun, if you guys like my little sound bites here. I have a quote
from Twisted Sister.
From it's Captain Howdy. It's the new band coming out next week. It's just a lot of screaming. Don't get too excited. In an old woman's voice. hold on. I do have it.
Why you do this to me, Demi?
Oh, I know. That's it.
I
this
know, it's
is
so
it's
sad.
So sad.
It
makes
so
me and
yeah.
we're gonna get sad now. Let's just hear it. Let me make sure I can like really hear this. So what we're talking about right now is what you just mentioned is, so Karis's mom is, she's old and he's taking care of her, and then they put her in a home, which, mm-hmm. what is that, by the way? It's not even a home. It's like, it's so upsetting.
I don't know.
Like, it, he walks through, when he goes to see her, her bed's like way down at the end.
Yeah.
Do you remember that scene? It was really, mm-hmm. and I actually almost kind of laughed at it a little bit because I'm noticing the acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, everyone is so crazy. They're all women, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
And
there
you all,
go, roles.
They're all
the roles.
Women, and they're all pulling at him and, mm-hmm. like, physically grabbing him to the point where the nurse has to, like, rip them away from him. It's
yeah.
almost like they're already, he's already building this idea of, like, this guy feels so bad that he put his mother here, and, like, he's just not, this isn't going to go away for him, you know, this guilt of, like, what he's, you know, what they decided to do with her. And so here's just a little take. That's not it. I just played. See
just
what is happening?
Air. Power of suggestion.
I just played air and nothing happened. Okay, now we're going to make it happen now. Ready?
Dimmy, won't you do this to me? Please, Dimmy. I'm afraid.
Oh, man. God, it's like, it's, I just, oh, right? I mean,
uh-huh.
how do you do that? How do
it's
you,
affecting.
It's really, it really is. And it's just, there's nothing to do.
Mm-mm.
No.
There's absolutely nothing you can do.
No, and then she dies really, really quickly after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that and he carries that into the exorcism with
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess that's the point is they use that to, like, you know, it's like pulling all the stops, right? The demon,
mm-hmm.
is like really going to attack you from where it's going to hurt you the most.
Appealing
kind of
to your sympathies and fears,
yeah.
and guilts and everything else that goes along with it, the human condition. But
yeah. And
yeah.
like, so now that you're talking, and I love all the stuff that you just brought up, these themes, but so, like, who is our protagonist, really, is what I'm thinking. Like, who am I really with? Because even though Linda Blair's character, you know, Reagan is,
mm-hmm.
possessed, I feel like, I think it's weird. Like, I cared less about her and more about
yeah.
the other characters, when really I feel like, are we supposed to be caring about her? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
She's a little bit sympathetic. I mean, her relationship with Ellen Burstyn or Chris McNeil, her mom,
right,
in the film,
right.
It's kind of descript. I mean, it's, you know, they're talking about horse. She wants a horse, and they talk about they're going to the movies together or wherever, and she's happy about that, and they're hugging, and it's her birthday, and it's,
I think they try, but I think
mother-daughter banter.
Yeah, but like what you said is so cool. Like, maybe it's a vehicle for everyone else.
Oh, I think,
you know,
so.
And so she just is that. She
yep.
just happens to be the thing that's going to, like, shift or possibly try to shift all these other people around it.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly the mother, but the mother doesn't. There's nothing that she doesn't shift out of anything.
No, she's like in histrionics most of the time, and she's. Yeah.
She really is, which
yeah,
is kind of my favorite.
I know,
she's,
I like
really,
it too. Yeah,
know,
she's cool.
She's like, this is bullshit. What are you saying to me?
Exactly. And she's,
why
right.
are you saying this to me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because I didn't, you know, there's some movies where I feel like, in terms of filmmaking, you go like, oh, that was so orchestrated, right? Like, that was so meant to happen, like all these specific things in a movie. But then I wonder sometimes with movies like this, like, how much of this stuff just happens, you know, in the creation of it. And even the director, or they don't even realize they're doing it. Like, but then
mm-hmm.
they're doing it, right? Like, deciding to have, like, a scene like you just spoke earlier about, where they're trying to come up with, they keep doing tests on her. They keep trying to figure out what's wrong with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this scene, which is my favorite, which is, like, a million doctors in a room. Like, a lot. I mean, how many guys are in that room? It's kind of like the final scene before she goes to the priest, right? What is that? Like, that had to have been purposeful, right?
Is this the, like, at the round table?
Yes.
There's one woman, I noticed
that. Is
that
right?
Yeah.
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 But it's a lot of
sounds
doctors.
Like, what's going on in this
it's
country
a lot
right
of doctors.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know what kind of health care she has, but that is not happening for a lot
yeah.
of people that
no,
you get that
not.
Many doctors. And is it because she's rich?
Especially now.
Or a
could
movie
be.
Star?
Who
like,
knows? Yeah. I'm not sure. Probably.
You think? And, like, I'm thinking, in a scene like that, did he plan that? Or he had to have planned it on some level, but
Maybe it was just to kind of overstate the graveness of the situation. I'm not sure.
I guess.
Or that, you know, we've exhausted all of our possibilities and here are all the people sitting here to prove it, or who knows?
He really wants to bring it home. You know, like, we are really trying here, guys, and this is not going to work. You know, she's possessed. I think by this point, though, after what we've seen, we're like, stop with the doctors. They're not doing anything.
Yeah, they're not doing shit. Yeah, and it went on for quite some time, and I don't remember it being quite so long, but I did want to mention that one of the doctors, one of the people in those scenes was, I guess, a fellow named Paul Bateson.
Oh, really?
And he was a real tech on staff at NYU. Those scenes were shot
here
at NYU.
Is that right?
The film takes place in Georgetown
University.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
And he was a real tech, but he was also, I think, accused of murdering a journalist. And I think it was somehow related to what was going on. The Cruising, by the way, was based on a true story. There really was a serial killer among the gay scene
in
New York City.
Yeah. Wow.
And I guess Bateson was part of that in some way, shape, or form. I can't remember. I don't know that he was arrested or not, but there's a whole...
Yeah, there's a lot of... And I haven't even gotten into that. There's a lot of scary, you know, whether it's... I don't know what you want to call it, but there were some bad things that happened around the making of this movie and then also even after.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think, you know, Jason Miller died not that long ago, and I think he just... I don't know if he was like an alcoholic or, but I think he died of like a heart attack or something. It just feels sad. It feels like this movie did not create a lot of joy for people.
Yeah, I think Mercedes McCambridge, the woman who voiced the demon, her son was involved in a triple homicide slash suicide.
There's a lot of tragedy around this movie, even like while it was happening. So what he's just speaking of is... The voice of, you know, Reagan's demon is actually this woman, Mercedes, and she was an actress, I guess, at the time.
She was in Giant and a bunch of other films. Yeah.
And she apparently, to create this voice, just drank and smoked a lot and, like, pulled up her own demons, you know, to, like, create this sound that came out of Reagan, which was a bit of a problem later because, as I was listening to that show I was telling you about, apparently... at least if they have their information correct, when she was recording those scenes, she told Friedkin, I don't want to be credited. Don't credit me.
Uh-huh.
And then when the movie went up for Oscars, she was like, I need to be credited. So there was some drama that came out about that, which took away from Linda Blair, her nomination, because she was nominated too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and then there was also some rumors, I guess, of like this movie was being snubbed for Oscars because it was like a horror movie. And then all this stuff happened around the same time. And so then it obviously just got too much bad vibes around it. And then they think maybe that's why it didn't, you know, it didn't win more than it did.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that maybe took away from Linda Blair being recognized as a great actress for a 12-year-old, which, by the way... I mean, holy cow. That's crazy.
I know, for a 12-year-old. And did you hear how she was cast in this film? Did you hear anything about this?
No, no. Tell me.
So Friedkin, so this was like, it was after, I think it was after casting had already taken place or some of the casting had taken place. And her mother and her showed up at his office on, I think it was Fifth Avenue in New York City. And just showed up unannounced.
Is that right?
And said, you know, her mother said, I have a daughter and I'd like her to read for this part. And I think Friedkin, I would never
That's
do that
nuts.
To William Friedkin because I'm afraid he would punch me in the stomach. But so they bring her in.
Yeah.
And I guess he reluctantly allows her to read or interviews her. And he said, have you read the book? And she said, oh, yeah, I read it. And she was 12 years old at the time.
That's crazy.
And this, I'm paraphrasing, so I'm just going to give you what I've heard.
Yeah.
And he said, well, what's your character about? What does she do? Well, she does bad things. She uses harsh language, and she's mean to her mom, and she throws stuff at her mother, and she masturbates with a crucifix. And William Friedkin said, well, do you know what that is, masturbation? And she said, yeah, it's kind of like jerking off, right?
Oh, my
and
God.
And Friedkin's like, well, do you do that? And she's like, well, yeah, don't you? And he was like, okay, I found my Reagan.
Hey, that's crazy.
I know.
Well,
isn't
she was
crazy?
Meant, obviously, that was like meant to be.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Whatever it did to her career, it's it just was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she, you know, like I said, I did meet her two times.
Well, you did? Okay, yeah, tell me.
I met her at a convention right after film school. I lived in Los Angeles and came back home. And I was going to a film convention with friends. And some of them were just like, they were asking her to sign things with phrases from the film. And she was like, no, I'm not going to write that on your poster. I'm not going to do it. I'll give you an autograph. Yeah. So, yeah. And I think she was
inundated. I don't
want to
write fuck me Jesus. I'm sorry. Exactly. I'm not doing it. Okay. Stop it. I don't want to say that anymore.
Yep.
I only said it for like 2 minutes. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I understand that she just wanted to sign it. So, yeah. And when I met her, by the time I got up to talk to her, it seemed a little exhausted and a little just standoffish, and that's all. She wasn't mean to me or anything. And then the second time I went to meet her was a couple of years later, and it was with my wife. And she when we got up to her table, there was no one around, but she kind of snubbed us to hug some dude. And my wife was like, okay, we're leaving. And
that she got upset. Walked away.
But yeah, my wife didn't want to.
Your wife was like, screw that.
Yeah, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to spend my money here.
Oh,
so that was it.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we had met, like, that same day we met Natasha Kinski and Peter Bogdanovich. Yeah. Peter Fonda was there that day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
all of these
cool.
great people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's hard for actors. I mean, like, it's so hard for them. No, I just mean, like, situations like that are always tough.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because she was typecast in so many films similar.
I know.
After
how do
that.
You get out of that? How do you move beyond that role? I mean, that, like, that's it.
I know. And she's still very charismatic. She's involved in PETA, speaking of veganism.
I heard that.
And
yeah.
She's uber smart, and she's interesting. I like her.
Right. Well, and you know, people are people. Like, it's just their art. It's just their craft. Acting is just your craft. It's not who you are.
Not at
you
all.
Know, I think that's why it's so funny when people are like, I don't like that actor. They're this. And I'm like,
how do
you,
you
have
know?
No idea who that person is. I'm like, you just don't like the role they played in a movie. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, give me a break. It's not. Hello.
Don't take it personally.
Yes. That's not who they are. Don't worry. She's not going to possess anyone else. But yeah, so. Let me see. What else can I share? Let's get back to where we just were about they take her to all these doctors. There's no success.
Mm-mm.
We're kind of following along with the pre-story, even though they're like setting that up, you know, his mother is. And I don't know if like there is some stuff around people being mentally ill,
mm-hmm.
you know, some themes around that, too, which is like, is his mother gone crazy? Like, why does she need to be? Are we supposed to assume that she's got like some forgetful thing like dementia or, you know, that she ends up in a place that I don't know if they just did that to like emphasize.
I don't think they really commented on it.
They
much.
Don't.
I think
they
it
don't.
Was kind of like just to enhance his vulnerability. You know, now mom is gone or now. And I'm helpless, really helpless at this
point.
Yeah,
and I think it adds a creepy feel to
it. Oh, definitely.
I mean, to see crazy people in any movie or people just like, it just freaks you out. You know,
and
you're like, oh, God, that's not good.
Not defining it is even more effective, I think.
Oh, totally. And that actually is a great thing that they do in this movie is they don't really explain a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, the doctors are saying a lot of things, but they're not. They're not going to give you anything.
No, which I think is great. I'm happy. I was going to comment on the multidimensionality of his personality, Karis too. I wish they delved into this a little bit more, but his attraction to Chris McNeil, the mother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Didn't it feel like something was going on between them?
Know.
Because she comments and she asks about him also and says, who is that priest who keeps coming around the set? He's a very intense look. And he's laughing at the beginning of the film when she's in the film within the film. And
Yeah. And the priests are like, I said again, sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
For it. They're like, they're just like doing a lot of fun shit. Okay,
yeah,
they're like
dudes.
Smoking, they're hanging out at parties, they're like, I mean, they're not wearing their outfits all the time. I'm like, I've never seen a priest in regular clothes. What's going on here? Like, this is crazy. So that is true. So there's definitely, you might think like, oh, maybe there's some kind of, I didn't totally pick up on that.
Yeah.
But
and that's actually before I revisited this film, I thought that I was going to be able to explore that more in writing, theoretically. And when I watched it, I was like, wow, there's not as much of this as I thought there once was.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting when we watch a story like that and you feel like these people are so alone. Like, you want them to have some help.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, where's their sidekick? Uh-huh. They need a buddy. They're not going to do this alone. Like, they need someone, you know? Like, she definitely needed someone. He kind of needed some kind of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is where it, you know, then we get into the story of, like, now they're going to they're going to get, you know, pull the priests in.
Yeah.
And they're going to go after the demon.
And they're going to restore the familial unit or happiness or unity.
Right.
You know, at the end of the film. And it's still kind of ambiguous because doesn't the film end on a note of the Michael Oldfield score? The Lee Cobb character comes back in,
okay,
the detective,
yeah,
and he takes
yeah.
the priest out for lunch. And
I think it's just
or
the
was
steps.
That the extended version? Maybe it was the extended
I think
version.
That the, I didn't see the extended. They with what I rewatched.
Should
it.
Not have watched the extended.
Oh,
I don't know why I
God.
Did. So I apologize for watching
why
that
are
you, one.
Hey, it's your deal.
I know, but it's confusing. It's confusing to watch that and then to talk about the film.
Oh,
how
it's
it was
okay.
released properly, but sorry.
No, it's okay. You're awesome. So. Do you want, should we do this? Should I read a scene with you?
Yeah, sure.
Do you want to for fun? All right, guys, we're going to, he's agreed to do the cold read portion of this. I didn't plan this very well. I'm going to stop saying that. So we're just, and it's funny because you're talking about, here's, hold on a second. Let me see if I can just pause this for once. Just take a little pause. Okay, so we are back, everyone. We are going to do a cold read of a scene. It's actually the scene where Chris McNeil, the mother, is you know, approaching the priest to get his help.
Yeah.
Okay? So in this moment, I'm going to just set the scene. She has kind of walked onto the street somewhere. They're meeting on a street, and they're, like, walking and talking. And I'm going to start. So here we go. And how do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
If a person was possessed by a demon of some kind, how do you go about getting an exorcism?
Well, the first thing I'd do is put them into a time machine and send them back to the 16th century.
I didn't get you.
Well, it just doesn't happen anymore, Miss McNeil.
Oh, yeah? Since when?
Since we learned about mental illness, paranoia, schizophrenia, all the things they taught me at Harvard. Miss McNeil, since the day I joined the Jesuits, I've never met one priest who has performed an exorcism. Not one.
Yeah, well, it just so happens that somebody very close to me is probably possessed and needs an exorcist. I'm supposed to be crying.
You're crying, and then...
Go ahead.
Wait, you have to... There's one more...
Oh, line. I have to say, Father Karras, it's my little girl.
I'm supposed to grab your arm.
Oh, I'm still crying.
That's all the more reason to forget about exorcism.
Why? I don't understand.
To begin with, it can make things worse.
But how?
Well, before the church approves an exorcism, it conducts an investigation to see if one's warranted. That takes time. In the meantime...
You could do it yourself.
No, I couldn't. I have to have church approval, and frankly, that's rarely given.
Could you see her?
Yes, I could. I could see her as a psychiatrist.
Not a psychiatrist. She needs a priest. She's already seen every fucking psychiatrist in the world, and they sent me to you. Now you're going to send me back to them? Jesus Christ, won't somebody help her?
No, you don't understand. Your daughter...
Oh, will you help her? Just help her. And then she bursts into tears and buries her head into Karras' shoulder. Karras puts his arm... Yeah, they're getting a little, like...
Yeah.
End scene. Sorry.
This is actually my, I think this is my favorite scene in the film next to the scene because I like any
time. That's so crazy. I picked your favorite scene. What is that about?
What's that?
I said, I picked your favorite scene. That's like so crazy.
That and the shot of Linda Blair when she enters the living room right before the demon does the territorial pissing through her
on
the carpet.
Some of this stuff is so graphic.
Yeah, and it's when the demon's kind of like, you know, I'm here to stay, you're fucked, you know, I'm peeing on your carpet at this point. But the scene, the camera is behind Linda Blair, so you see her from behind and the startled party guests in the background.
Yeah, that's great.
It's that still shot. That should have been the film poster. That would have been
you
fantastic.
Think so?
Yeah, even without the pee. It's just, it's horrifying. Because
it's
she's
really
dressed,
bad.
She's dressed in such a monochromatic way at that point.
Right.
And there's these guests and they're, you know, New Year's. I don't know if it takes place. No, it's not New Year's Eve. I don't know what's
I don't
going
on. What
there's
kind
some kind
of
celebration.
It, yeah, it's something.
I think it might just be like a cast party or
I
something.
I think you're
Who
right.
Knows?
It's like a movie party. And I just thought of something. There's also like... I think before she comes down, it's like almost now the house is possessed because mm-hmm. the two men in the kitchen I think they're involved with the movie. They get into an argument and they start like trying to hurt each other. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, I do.
They like get into a fight and then the people have to like break it up. And it's almost saying that like whatever's happening in this room upstairs with this girl is like affecting everyone in the house. So like the energy is so negative that these guys are like getting into it and they're ready to like kill each other.
That's
right now.
That's a great point. Yeah.
I wrote that down because I was like, that was a weird scene.
And I think it's also, it sounds like a swipe at Nazism, which it deserves more than a swipe.
Because that's what he said, something you're a Nazi.
Yeah.
Like,
he calls him a Nazi.
What was that
about? I think Burt Jennings is just like laying into the hired help for the house.
Yeah, okay. That was a weird part too. But I think what's really crazy is the way they try to, the things they came up with that would be upsetting. And like, I don't think off the top of my head, I would think that like peeing would be so scary in a sense. But like when it happens like that, when a girl that age, because she's too old to really do that.
Yeah.
But she's still kind of a kid, but it's just enough to just make you get like really freaked out and be like, whoa, that's not okay.
And
like,
it's just a typical human function, but taken out of context, like on the living room carpet in front of party guests, is so fucking effective.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great read. Thank you. That was fun.
Yeah, it was good.
That was
really
fun.
Yeah.
You're much better
than
me. But
no,
you like
not at
all. You actually act, so that was fun. Let me see what other. So then we, you know, I'm just going to move along with the story
bit.
Please.
Yeah, I feel.
I don't
like
even know how we're out on time. I usually can take this pretty far, as you guys know. but what I'm noticing about movies is when you actually talk about it with somebody, it's there's a lot to say because we are receiving it in a certain way, and certain parts of the movie connect to us and other than other parts do. So go ahead.
I would also speak to about the location as well. So you have the exteriors were shot in Georgetown at the 3600 Prospect Avenue or Prospect Street house, whatever that is.
Yeah.
But the interiors were filmed at Kecko Studios in New York, CECO.
Oh, did they?
Also movie to yeah, so
all, I didn't know
so
that.
The interiors were sound stages from what I understand.
Okay.
Which is always disappointing to me.
Yeah,
I feel like I always want to shoot on practicals. Like, Yes, Your Time was shot on all practical locations.
Oh, cool.
Sound stages are always offered, but I feel like it feels false, but I know that inevitably I'm going to have to shoot on a soundstage one day. Like, I understand, you know, and
that's,
I understand
the
practicality around, especially within a film, even with in-camera effects, they just need space.
Yeah.
And they need to be able to refrigerate a set, which
I know,
course,
we have and I feel like we should start talking about this stuff. No, you're right. Like, so there's the making it to make some of the scenes in this movie apparently were, especially then, they didn't have special effects like
we
have now.
No, and I prefer it.
Yeah, and so there was, you know, they had to use some kind of thing to make the bed shake.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, like, people got injured a
wires
lot on
pulleys,
this movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like pulleys, and, you know, I think Linda Blair suffered a lot of physical pain because of all the shaking and whatever they had to do to make that happen. And then also Ellen Burstyn got, like, yanked back by some kind of pulley, like, when that, when she gets thrown from her daughter or whatever.
Yeah, and fell on her coccyx.
Yeah, I mean, this.
And they kept the screen. They kept her
God.
Reaction. She was disturbed by that.
Like, can these actors sue for, like, injury? I
probably.
Mean, they might have, like, lifelong injuries from a few scenes in a movie.
Plus the psychological damage visited upon them by being directed by William Friedkin, I think.
Oh,
is he
pretty?
No,
you're saying
very
a lot
intense.
Of nice things about
he's,
him.
No, I do. I love him.
I don't.
Think
we don't know him.
No.
I don't know him.
He's
so
intense.
Yeah, and so that's that stuff must have been really difficult. And you can really I was rewatching when I was watching that scene wherever, you know, it's cold, obviously.
Uh-huh.
There's like everyone's breath is like, poof, you know, that they had to like make the room like extremely cold, like like a refrigerator so that they could do that.
And then they could only shoot for like 3 minutes at a time because
God.
The lights in the room would heat it back up to room temperature.
Is that right?
It's tungsten lighting. Yeah. So
yeah.
So then they would have to take a break and get the room cold again, you know. And
so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so stressful, too. So then you're right. There's, like, the physical stress and whatever you have to endure to make those scenes. And then the mental stress.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I can only
of, like,
imagine.
Having to bring some kind of, you know, acting to a scenario where you're physically being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus he, you know, he would fire guns, like shoot blanks next to actors' ears to get reactions.
Are you
sometimes.
Kidding me?
No, I'm not. And
what is wrong with him?
Exactly. So, because there were a lot of badasses that could badass directors that came from that, you know, generation that thought that they could get away with.
They're like,
with
let's
anything.
Do this. I'm method.
Yeah,
method. Scare me. Make it real.
He also slapped
What?
William Dyer, the priest, what is his name? I can't remember.
He slapped people around?
He said something like he came up to him and he said, it was the reaction at the end of the film when he's giving Karras the last rites.
Oh.
Whoever plays that character. I want to say his name is William Dyer.
The other priest, yeah. So the good-looking priest. The other good-looking
priest.
He's
really good-looking, yeah.
Yeah, the young, hot priests.
We all want hair like that, by the way. Don't let males fool you. But, and so I guess he walked up to him and he said, "Do you trust me?" And he said, "Yeah." And he slapped him in the face and then he rolled camera.
Oh,
that's why his
God.
Hands are shaking at the end of the film.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Can you imagine slapping someone who's on set reading your lines?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I would never
I don't
do
know.
It.
Yeah. I don't direct actors on the reg.
They rarely ask to be slapped.
Yeah. Can you please slap me? I need a slap here. I'm not focused. I need to be more focused. Yeah, I mean, I think looking back on that aspect, Linda Blair, man, I mean, that's a lot to deal with.
It is a lot to deal with.
You know, I know that, like, acting alone for kids and having them be really good is, you know, that's, like, amazing when you see a great performance, but that is so many things against her,
mm-hmm.
and to still be able to maintain that, and I think that that gets overlooked. Yeah, maybe her voice wasn't the same voice, but, like, every expression on her face and the way she could deliver like a cold stare.
Absolutely.
I mean, the scene where they hypnotize her is one of my favorite scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's
it turns
like a push in and
yeah, it turns so quickly. It's like you just are kind of like, okay. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, it's like, oh my God. And I love that. You know, they're recording it and they try to like figure out what the voices are.
Uh-huh.
I also like ghost stories too. So like I always love those scenes when they have seances and they're trying to, you know, figure out what the person's saying, and then later they play it back, and
sure.
it's like this message.
Have you seen the Olivia Assayas film Personal Shopper with Kristen Stewart?
No.
It's great. It's French.
I have to see. Well, I like Kristen Stewart.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
It's a slow-moving, great, like, Euro-style horror film. That's
it's a horror film?
Understating. Yeah.
I didn't know that. I've passed over it a bunch of times. I'm like,
It's fantastic.
Nah.
That and
I didn't know that. See, now I'm going to watch that. That's amazing.
Highly recommended.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think, it's a good film.
That is. I don't know how, are we like, what's our time?
I don't know. It's up to you.
I
feel
I don't
like
know
I've
either.
I've been talking too much.
I want to know what else you have to say there on your notes. Tell me.
I was going to say, I think that some of the realism in the film comes out also because the camera work is mundane, as I feel like all camera work should be in a film. When the camera gets in the way, and you could tell, like, money shots, I never, like, they took me out of the film. Same with special effects. Like, I could do with never seeing another special effect in my life.
I had this conversation again about a movie like Jaws, because that was made in 75. I think there's something about movies from that time period, because they couldn't do those things so easily. I'm a big fan, like you are, of just, like, slowing it down
slowing
a bit.
It down. And it's because they're storytellers, mm-hmm. like, filmmakers today, and I use, again, a quote that I would use loosely because everybody's a filmmaker
I
all
know,
of a sudden.
Right?
Everybody, and there aren't any storytellers. You know,
I
like,
don't think young people understand that aspect.
No, they
because they're not watching stories. One mm-mm. thing I was talking about with someone, and I have kids, and they, you know, they'll sit and watch a movie, but I will say my kids are more apt to watch, like, YouTube clips, you know, like, they don't want to take the time to even watch a full movie.
Yep.
Like, I used to be so excited to go to the movies, and I'll be like, let's go to the movies. And they're like, oh, it's too long. I don't want to sit there for 3 hours. You know, like, they don't want to invest, but that's just their generation.
Sure.
I mean, they will. They'll go to the movies, but not like I wanted to go to the movies when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, I was excited. I was like, oh, we get to go to the movies. This is amazing. Like, I was into it. And they're just kind of like, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, we're all numbed by so much stimuli.
Yeah. It's like almost so much. You wonder how much that's influencing what you're talking about.
I know. And it's made it more difficult to get independent films made that have a solid story, that aren't, especially if there's some genre bending, which I like in storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult because everybody wants something that's 90 minutes. They don't want 2 hours, unless you're overseas. You know, they have a longer,
I didn't know that.
I feel like they have a more of a tolerance. You know, I feel like it's a, I know it's going to sound rude, but I feel like it's a smarter audience.
Be rude.
I think you're a smarter audience overseas. So,
well, probably they always say that, though, that foreign, that whole environment is so different. The culture is different.
Yeah.
Art is different, especially films.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, here it's such a business.
And these guys also, a lot of these directors, people like Dennis Hopper. Have you seen Dennis Hopper's follow-up film after Easy Rider?
No.
It's called The Last Movie.
No.
I would highly recommend it.
Do I need
it.
To see it? You need to write me down a list.
I don't want to say much about
no,
it.
No.
I love it.
You need to give me a list. Times. I love it.
Anyway, I'll stop referencing that.
No, it's okay.
But,
I love it. Yeah.
But these people were influenced by European filmmakers, a lot of them, and they cared about storytelling, and they cared about cinema. It wasn't going to be fast, you know. The
yeah.
stories were not going to be told. And also, there's a lot of good, positive padding. There's a story there. And there's peripheral characters who are worthy of telling somewhat of a story. You know, and
yeah.
you don't see that a lot of times. It's like, okay, what's the point of this? Okay, it's got to be plot driven and boom, boom, boom. And then
yeah.
in scene and act three, everything's got to be wrapped up tightly. Okay, we roll credits, you know.
I know. That's why I like movies that don't follow the rules. And
oh,
like,
me too.
A movie I haven't discussed yet, but everybody's talking about The Joker. And
I haven't seen The Joker.
You have to see it.
Okay.
Some people have compared it to The King of Comedy.
Great film.
Yeah. And I
Perfect
didn't
film.
Think about it until I saw it, but that's a whole other. I'm going to do a whole show on that once I get someone to really that I want to talk, you know, sit down and talk with The Joker. But it's not, it's been received in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing acting. It's
yeah, Joaquin
it's
Phoenix.
Slowed down. It's very, it feels like an old movie to me when I watched it.
Nice.
I was kind of surprised. I didn't even think I wanted to see it. And then I was like, everyone's talking about this movie. I got to see this movie. And then, and a lot of people think it's too violent. There's a lot of, you know, opinions about the themes in this movie and the current climate that we live in with like guns and terrorism and
yeah.
like mental illness and all these, which is another reason it's cool to talk about, but
sure.
you should definitely see it.
I'll see it.
Yeah. And I felt that like, I loved it. And I felt like it had that old movie, like kind of dramatic, like kind of just let you sit with these people and
yeah.
like let you be with the scene without having to try and force so much of it. Not the whole movie, because it does do its stuff, but it has moments that I thought were really cool. And you're right. Like, you don't see that as much anymore.
No. There are some directors like James Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any of James Gray's films?
Give me like a movie that he's done. That
We Own the Night, The Yards.
Oh, We Own the Night. Yeah, I've seen that. Okay.
Two Lovers. And most recently, Lost City of Z. I actually saw that at Metrograph with him in the theater. He's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
But he's so
yeah.
smart about film. All of Paul Thomas Anderson's films, I feel
I know.
like Magnolia is
yeah,
a masterpiece.
Yeah. He's so different.
Like, I love watching
Do you love
his
him?
Films.
Like,
oh
who are
God,
your
yeah.
favorite, like, your favorite directors or filmmakers?
I love Woody Allen. I'm sure I'm going to take criticism. I love Woody Allen.
Annie yeah,
Hall
of
and,
course.
And Manhattan are two of my favorite films. I love Steven Soderbergh's first couple of films. I love Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
That's
it's probably
a great
my
movie.
Favorite American film. Yeah. I love Paul Thomas Anderson. There's this guy, you know, I don't love every film that he made, but I love Gaspar Noé. Do you know Gaspar Noé?
No.
He made the film Love, which is also on Netflix.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
It's a slow-moving film, pretty much about a menage a trois and a relationship. And it's very...
Whoa.
It's a great, quiet, biting, atmospheric, sad, sad tale. I would highly recommend that. It's probably my favorite, the best film I've seen in the past 20 years.
Whoa.
Yeah, I really
wow.
love that film.
Do you see a lot of films? Do you go to a lot?
I don't.
Of
I don't go to the movies. And I feel like because I made a feature film and a featurette before that, and so, that it's I've demystified it somewhat, and I just
Someone
can't bring myself
told me
to
that,
go.
That you can't be like, you can't turn it off, I guess.
I wish I could. But sometimes I can. Like if I
yeah.
go back and I watch like older cinema,
mm-hmm.
then I'm kind of back. I'm enraptured again, you know, by
yeah.
it because I guess the people look like they did when I was younger and I just male and female relationships and just people relating as adults and kind of things. How I remember them. I never see these days, but when
right.
I revisit one
right.
of those films, I'm back in that world again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have that thing where I can dissect a movie and kind of see it for all these parts, but I also can like really, I don't know. I'm always like a kid at heart, you know. I can still cheer in the audience and get really into this, get just kind of be the viewer.
Yeah,
I
the
kinda,
unwilling suspension
Yeah,
of disbelief.
Like I can do a little bit of both. Maybe that's been the gift of my children, like
mm-hmm.
being able to go to movies with them and
yeah.
just kind of like notice how they can see a movie and be like, oh my God, you know, like, be like, what's your favorite part? What's your favorite, you know, and they're like, I like the part when the guy does this. And I'm like, yeah, that was pretty cool, you know? So like, that's helped me kind of turn that part off. But I just as much can get really into the, just breaking it, like what we were talking a little
mm-hmm.
bit about today. And I don't know. I still love both aspects of of movies.
I do get into it. Like my friend Bill Ackerman and I, the guy who runs the supporting characters guy, he and I will sit, and sometimes my wife will come too, and we'll watch between 5 and 7 movies back to back.
Oh, my God. You guys have a film festival.
Yeah, we'll start at 8
That's
in the morning.
That's awesome.
And just go until midnight and drink and eat. And, like, by the end of the night, I feel like 1,000 pounds heavier and a little drunk. And we've traversed all genres. And he has such a vast collection of films, too, that anything is at our disposal.
That's so cool. Yeah. I feel like I don't meet. This is why I'm so happy I'm doing this. We probably do have to stop in a minute.
I'm sorry.
I could do like a 3-hour. I say this every time. Like, it could go to 3 hours easily. There's so much to discuss. Everyone, what else do you want to know about my childhood? I will tell people listening, like, please see this movie, even if you're afraid of it. It's kind of an interesting watch.
It is.
And it's like pop culture. Like, you kind of have to know about this movie a little bit.
It is. And look at the film for what it is outside of the demonic possession. Because even if you took that away, there's a story there. I feel like there is a story there.
There is a story there. And it's not it doesn't have a happy ending.
It doesn't.
It does not. You know, it's kind of like anything. I don't think there's a way to come out of this okay. Uh-uh. That's also a little bit bullshit, by the way. So she, like, is possessed by a demon, and then it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's, like, just fine. Like, the next day, they're, like, putting her in the car. She looks normal. I'm like,
well, she's finished puberty.
Yeah.
That's it.
Is that what we're supposed to understand? I don't know, man. That's so funny. maybe that's all it was. Oh, boy. So much more to say about this movie. Well, anyway, everyone, I might post some of these little notes on my Facebook page if you guys are curious about some of the things we were talking about today. Maybe I'll create a little information about this you can look at after. A few links for you to check out as well. And also, Chris, I will mention his website and your films.
Yeah, Myatt's Filmworks is the website. I think it's got a
change. Yeah, give yourself a plug.
So, the film that I directed in Rehoboth and Lewis's Yes, Your Tide is Cold and Dark, Sir, and it's on Amazon.com. Alms, you say, is unavailable. It's just for me in my basement, although I screened it quite a bit when
it was out. Someone's going
to
break in. Put it on the web. I
directed a couple of videos for my band, The Collingwood, also. One is called White Deer, one is called Fuck Yeah Hollywood. And some of that was shot in Lewis also.
Oh, okay,
White Deer was. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have a new one that you're working on.
I have a new film called The Last Time I Saw You Blessed, and we're pretty much all the way financed, and we have some partners in Los Angeles, so that's why I'm going to the American film market to see if we can bring some more support our way.
Awesome. Can you give me a category of what this film's going to like be?
It's a drama.
Drama?
It's a female-driven drama. Is
nice.
What it's about a
women,
it's about
women-driven
a female,
stories.
Oh,
I love it.
We need them, especially now.
I think
Boy,
so.
Do we need them.
I see them
Absolutely.
All the time now, actually.
Yeah,
I'm
it's
kind
good.
Of blown away by it. Yeah, it's a great change, in a sense, to see so many strong female leads in stories, and not just movies, and TV, too, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I would highly recommend the film The Love Witch to you. Also, I told you that you should check that film out.
Oh, my God.
I
need
it.
To write this stuff down.
Anna Biller, shot on 35mm
a
couple of years ago.
Wow. Cool. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on, talking about this messed up movie with me, and maybe we'll have you back on another time. That'd
cool.
be really
yeah,
cool.
Please do. I'm honored. Thank you for asking me.
Oh,
even though I feel like I just bugged you.
Oh, I know you didn't. This is a pleasure. I love it. I love when people bug me. Please bug me. If you're listening, bug me. Send me some messages. Let me know what you think.
Can we do the next one from a church?
Oh, dude.
Sacristy.
Can we do it from the confessional? That would be even better.
Only if the members of Twisted Sister are there.
Exactly. All right, everyone. Well, thanks for listening this week. And we'll have a new show for you next week. So follow us on all the media. And join us next time on The Film Effect with Tiff.